I'm sitting here with Stephen Smith, music director of the Richmond Symphony. Today, we're talking about the 60th anniversary season opener for the Richmond Symphony, which we will broadcast live on WCVE this coming Thursday, September 14th at 8 o'clock in the Carpenter Theater at the Dominion Arts Center. Stephen, we are so excited to be there.
I'm excited you're there, too. I'm excited we're there. It's a spectacular concert.
And you plan a long time for these concerts. Of course, you got thrown a curveball this time because the pianist Long Long was originally supposed to join us, and he has an unfortunate injury, and Joshua Bell stepped up to the plate. He was here 3 years ago. You've got to be thrilled to have him coming back.
Absolutely, we are. He's just such a great artist and a wonderful person, and it's just a huge pleasure to be able to share the stage again with one of the great artists of our time.
Now, there's a lot on the program. I was intrigued by the first piece because I don't know it. A theater set for orchestra by Ulysses Kay. What were you thinking about when you chose that to be the season opener? I'm curious.
Yeah, well, I like to think of the opening of any season to be particularly celebratory, to be very buoyant and joyful. There's also, every now and then, a little bit further messages about what I like. I want to be able to show off the orchestra, which is why we have the Heldenleben. We have, right. want to show off a great guest artist like Joshua Bell. But also in terms of choice of repertoire, I like to sometimes feature people who are undeservedly ignored for various reasons. Ulysses Kay was a major figure in the 20th century in American music, African-American composer. He wrote a ton of music for films, for TV, choral pieces, orchestral pieces, and yet we don't hear his music hardly at all anymore, which I think is a terrible shame. And this piece in particular, I thought, opened this program in a very unique and cheerful, buoyant kind of way. And we also had to think about timings of pieces.
Right.
So with Heldenleben, which is a pretty meaty piece, we didn't have time for a lot. So this little bit of 3 minutes of overture from his theater set, I thought would just be the perfect thing.
And Stephen's referring to Ein Heldenleben, of course, A Hero's Life, the tone poem by Richard Strauss. That's quite a masterpiece in itself. It almost could sit on half a program by itself. So you're really featuring the orchestra right off the bat, aren't you?
Absolutely. I mean, more typically, it is the second half, the major second half of any other concert.
So how do these two pair together?
Well, the idea is that we feature the orchestra in such a way that they're taking kind of the traditional soloist's place, the place to show off, as it were. But it's the orchestra in this
right.
case, because there's such incredible solos for so many members of the orchestra. It really is its own concerto in a certain way. And then after intermission, we have our big guest star. And so the balance of that, I think, is again, plays to the celebratory nature of the evening.
You want to talk a little bit more about the Strauss for people that might not be familiar with the background on that? I mean, some people feel it's an autobiography from Strauss.
Yeah. Some people feel that Strauss wrote this because he was some kind of an egomaniac and he had to put himself into music.
Aren't all composers? To a certain extent.
I suppose.
I forgot that you're a composer as well. I shouldn't have said that.
Well, people accuse conductors of that, too. So
that's true.
I guess
you've got a double whammy there.
Two ways. But I think with Strauss, certainly he was somebody who was well aware of his own abilities, and he achieved great success at a very young age, already in his 20s, with his first early series of tone poems. And Ein Heldenleben was really the culmination of that part of his life. And I don't know. I have no basis for this in fact, but it could be that at the point he wrote Ein Heldenleben, he was already looking forward to the next phase of his career. And he became a very successful opera composer after this early series of tone poems. So in a way, he had kind of two careers as a composer. And I think with Ein Heldenleben, he actually talked about Ein Heldenleben being a companion piece to his tone poem, Don Quixote. Mm. And so there's something there about Don Quixote as sort of an anti-hero in a certain way,
right.
or a tragic hero, a misguided hero, however you want to portray Don Quixote, which is one of my favorite books, by the way. I think Strauss thought of the two pieces as being kind of foils for each other. So I don't think he had himself necessarily in mind from the very beginning idea of Ein Heldenleben. Heldenleben. I think he used himself and his own life to frame what became a bigger piece. So there are certainly autobiographical elements. There's in the different sections of the piece, there's one which describes the hero himself. Strauss, by all accounts, was actually somewhat introverted and not at all given to the kind of boisterous opening that this piece is. But then there are other elements. The section called The Hero's Companion, which features the very famous and very difficult violin solo, was very definitely, he said this in letters, modeled after his own wife. And so she can be very, very loving, very tender, but also very mercurial, and you hear all of this in the violin solo, and that doesn't change the fact that they were married 55 years, so it was not like he was making fun of her or anything. He was very much a part of it, and the idea that at the conclusion of the piece, which kind of winds down, you hear this interplay of the solo violin returning and the solo French horn, maybe as emblematic of the hero. It actually places the two of them in the midst of this loving relationship and this wonderful shared life that they had together. So I think it's easy to overplay the importance of Strauss's ego in this piece. It's easy to do. But I think that that's not necessarily the whole point. I think it has a larger story than that.
And, you know, you mentioned the orchestra sort of being featured in the soloist spot. It's unusual to have the soloist come out and do the second half, but that's the way this program has worked out.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, you originally had a different piece program, so that kind of probably came into play here. But you've got Joshua Bell and the 13-year-old prodigy, Yesung Sophie Lee. They're doing the Bach concerto for two violins. That's an unbelievably popular piece.
Yeah, it is, and deservedly so.
Yeah.
It's one reason it's so popular is that it's approachable on just a simply technical level by many younger violinists. And so it's as you're growing up as a violinist in high school or something, you frequently play the Bach double with other people.
Right.
And it's a lot of fun. But it's also, you know, people say this about Bach, people say it particularly about Mozart, that it might be in some ways kind of easy to play the notes. Actually playing the music is the much, much harder thing. So to think of it as just kind of a throwaway is not really correct. And it provides an opportunity for this great sharing of kind of two generations of these talented violinists, Joshua and Sophie. And they're very much equal parts. It's not like one plays the first part and one plays the second part. Those are arbitrary numbers. They're really equal in difficulty, and they play off of each other in a very, very special kind of way. It's, I think, emblematic of Bach's great sense of instrumental color and instrumental counterpoint.
Sophie is the concertmaster of the Seattle Youth Symphony. So how did she come into the equation here?
She came about through a discussion with the Menuhin competition, of which she was one of the winners. And, you know, we were looking for, it's not like we needed more splash with Joshua Bell, but we just thought the opportunity came up to feature her. And we thought that this would be an ideal way to kind of bring them together and to cast our opening with an even more celebratory sense of fanfare.
I would think this is going to be very exciting for her as well.
I hope so. Yeah, I would imagine.
And how about the final work on the piece? We're featuring Joshua alone.
We are. And he is playing Lalo's Symphony Espanol, which is actually another one of those pieces that as a young violinist, and having been a young violinist, that's how I can say all these
right.
things. You know, it's one of those pieces that most young violinists study at some point. So it sort of suffers in some ways from student performances all the time. But it really is an incredible masterpiece. Just from a historical point of view, there's always been this assumed connection between Spanish music and French music. Part of it is geographic, of course, although there's a very large mountain range in the way. But this sharing of musical cultures as well, maybe the biggest example of that is Bizet's opera Carmen, based on the Spanish Spanish subject, but by a French composer. Actually, this Symphonie Espagnole predates Carmen, and it predates the music of Ravel, who also famously blended the two musical idioms. And in a lot of ways was maybe the one of the first opportunities for the French concert world to have this sort of Spanish influence. And that grew into an entire range of pieces that continues to this day. So it actually has this kind of interesting history. It's also interesting, and it's more than just a concerto. It's a five-movement piece. None of them are terribly long, but they're all sort of their own individual kinds of episodes and moods and emotions. So it has this sort of loose framework of a symphony rather than just a three-movement concerto. And so that's how he came up with that title, Symphonie Espagnole.
And I guess that will make it a little bit more appropriate to be at the end of the concert just because of the type of work it is.
I think that's right. Yeah. It becomes very, very substantial. Yeah. I should add that Lalo wrote it for the great Spanish violinist Pablo de Sarasate. And he was somebody who was really bringing he was playing short kind of Spanish-flavored showpieces, being Spanish himself, and so he had come to France, and Lalo wrote this piece for him, and he wrote several pieces for him actually. And Sarasate was one of the great violinists of history, and a lot of violinists perform works of his, of course, today too. So it's kind of fun to look back at this piece as being a little more important from a historical standpoint than sometimes we give it credit for. It becomes a little bit more substantial.
Well, this is going to be very exciting. Again, the Richmond Symphony's 60th anniversary season opener, Thursday evening, September 14th at 8 o'clock. You can get tickets online at richmondsymphony.com. If you can't make it out, we will be here with you on 88.9 WCVE. I'm really proud of our partnership, Stephen. It's so great to talk with you once again.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for everything that WCVE does for our community. And it's going to be fantastic to share in this opening night broadcast.